Father, thank you for tonight. Thank you for the time we can be here. We realize, Lord, some of our folks tonight are on vacation. Some are working. We just pray that you be with them. And thank you for those that are here tonight. And as we continue in our study, Lord, tonight of the book of Judges, I just pray that you'd open our eyes to understand these wonderful truths. And Lord, may we not fall into the trap of the book of Judges, the constant up and down and going into captivity and praying for deliverance, because every man did that which is right in his own eyes. Help us to seek you and ever keep you before our eyes. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, page 72. We're studying the book of Judges, and we... Chapter 12, we learn about the 9th, 10th, and the 11th judges, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. And we don't know anything about them other than they judged. We know nothing of the oppressing nation. We know nothing of the length of the oppression. We do know that there was 7 years of peace with Ibzan, and there was 10 years of peace with Elon, and 8 years of peace, and it's just unrecorded. Isn't it interesting? Sometimes you go through the Bible, and, you know, you learn a lot about one person, but you don't learn a lot about somebody else. Why is that? I don't know. But why, you know, even think of the disciples. There's 12 disciples, and some of them, the only thing we know about them is their name. They never even said one word recorded for us in the scriptures. I mean, obviously they spoke, but nothing is recorded from them. It's interesting, you know, it's just interesting. So anyway... but we do know quite a bit about the next man, chapter 13, we're going to look at, and that's Samson. And when I say the word Samson, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
Delilah.
Anything else?
Strength.
Hair.
Okay. The men all said strength. The women all said dollars.
Selfish.
Very selfish.
Very selfish.
But the interesting thing about him, don't forget this. And again, when we look at these things, sometimes we think, oh, how can that be? But he's recorded in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, in the Hall of Faith chapter, you know, where Paul... says, you know, what could we say of, you know, Gideon and of Jephthah, which we looked, and of Samson, right? You know, these great men of faith. And sometimes you read these things and you're like, you know, but evidently when he had faith, right? I mean, and we're going to see, really in scripture, what we're going to see is two different Samsons. Samson walking after the flesh, and Samson filled with the Spirit. And when Samson walks after the flesh, what is he?
A mess,
just like any other man, right? He's just like any other man. But when Samson is filled with the Spirit and walks after the Spirit, he does unbelievable things. And one of these things were, it's part of why I gave you the map, one of the things we're going to see tonight. So the oppressing nation was the Philistines, and of course the Philistines, who are the Philistines? If you remember, we talked about they were the inhabitants on the shore of Gaza. And their name means immigrants, okay? So over here you see Gaza. And it's interesting, today this area is the Gaza Strip in Israel. Don't think Palestinians equals Philistines. Don't think that. That's not the case, okay? We don't have time to get into that geopolitical debate tonight, okay? But the Philistines, who is probably the most notorious Philistine in the Bible? Goliath, big tall guy, right? Mighty warrior. So the Philistines were very often a thorn in the side of the nation of Israel. Samson, just before we get into the study of him, I do not believe that Samson was this huge, muscular man, right? I think he looked like any other Israelite of his day. Because when he did great things, he was filled with the Spirit, right? And even some of these things that he did, which we will see, even if you're a Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Lou Ferrigno or a whoever, you know, you couldn't do them. There's no way you could do them, you know. And so he the nation of Israel was oppressed by the Philistines for 40 years. And after this time, 20 years of peace came, okay? Chapter 13, verse 1 tells us that Israel had been in bondage for 40 years. And then in verse 2 and 3, look what it says in Judges 13, 2 and 3. There was a certain man of Zorah, of the family of the Danites. So what tribe is he from? Dan, okay? Whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and bare not. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman and said unto her, behold now, thou art barren and bearest not, but thou shalt conceive and bear a son. Okay, so what do we see often in the Bible? Women that can have babies, some of them were visited, right, by angels, and their sons would be foretold, you know, about their birth. And this was the case with Samson and his mother. So the messenger instructs in verse 4 and 5, now therefore, beware, I pray thee, and drink not wine nor strong drink, eat not any unclean thing, for lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. So here's something we also must understand, that God chooses whom he will to deliver his people, right? God, we saw last week, God chose Gideon. And Gideon was kind of like, me, right? Well, now he chooses Samson even before he's born. And he says, I'm going to raise up Samson, and he's going to be a Nazarite. Now, that doesn't mean he's from the town of Nazareth, but a Nazarite vow, we learn about that in Numbers chapter 6, and there were three restrictions placed upon them. He could not touch wine, okay, or anything that came from the vine, right? So couldn't eat grapes, couldn't have any kind of jam, couldn't have any kind of grape juice or wine. Or raisins, right? So, and the interesting thing, geographically, where Samson was raised was known for their
wine.
Grapes, and yes, wine. Okay, so and the other thing was they couldn't, their hair couldn't be cut, and the third thing is they couldn't touch any dead body. Now, the Nazarite vow was only like for a certain type, a certain time. Like someone could say, I'm going to take this Nazarite vow and I'm going to be dedicated to God for, you know, thus and such amount of time, right? And then when you were done with that vow, you shaved your head. We see Paul took a Nazarite vow because it says that in the book of Acts, you know, he had made a vow and he shaved his head, so, you know, and he went to the temple. But scripture records three people who were Nazarites their whole life. Do you remember?
John the Baptist.
Samson. And the next one we're going to study next week, Samuel. Okay? So these were dedicated to the Lord their whole life. Okay? And so, you know, and think about it, you know, it may seem strange, you know, no wine, cut the hair. But, you know, a lot of times we see pictures of Jesus with long hair, right? If a Nazarite wasn't to cut his hair and grew it out long, what does that assume everybody else's hair is? Short, okay? And historically, Jewish men had short hair, long beards. Historically, okay? We can even see that in Paul's writing to the Corinthians. Don't you know that it's a shame for a man to have long hair? So culturally, in Jesus's day, Jesus would not have had long hair. You know, he would have had short hair, long beard. You know, they grew their beards out. But you know, a lot of times our artwork, and I'm not against this, you know, but sometimes we make Jesus look more like a European than a Jewish man, you know, and so, okay? And his mother couldn't even touch these things while she was pregnant, okay? So, you know, he was to be separated to God. On this occasion, Samson's parents prayed a prayer that all expectant Christian parents should pray. Look at verse 8. And then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, "O my Lord, let the man of God which thou didst send come again unto us and teach us what we shall do with this child that shall be born." Right? Isn't that a great, you know, what should we do? Of course, we know what we should do, but that's a great prayer. And then look at verse 12. And Manoah said, "Now let thy words come to pass. How shall we order the child? And how shall we do unto him?" So Manoah and his wife, interesting people. You know, Manoah comes back to his wife, and he's all, "Oh, you know, this angel came, you know, we saw the angel of the Lord, and we're going to die." And she said, the wife calmed him down and said, "Hey, why would he tell us what to do with the child if we were going to die?" Right? Which is further proof that the angel of the Lord here was Jesus, a pre-incarnate appearance of Jesus, okay? And so Samson was born, and he was empowered by the Holy Spirit, even as he grew. Look at chapter 13, look at verse 24 and 25. "And the woman bare a son and called his name Samson. And the child grew, and the Lord blessed him. And the Spirit of the Lord began to move him at times in the camp of Dan between Zorah and Eshtaol." So the name Samson, Shimshone is the Hebrew way of saying it. And the name Samson means little son, not S-O-N, S-U-N, okay? Which, you know, maybe he was not so big of a guy after all, you know. Remember the Hollywood movie back from the old days? I don't know if half the class wouldn't remember, the other half would remember. We would have seen it in a rerun, but a big Hollywood actor named Victor Mature played Samson, and he was this, you know, big, muscular guy. I don't think so. That's just my opinion, okay? So, all right? So Samson is born. An angel appears unto his mother and father and says, "You're going to have somebody who's going to deliver you from this 40-year reign of the Philistines." So God chose Samson. Samson didn't choose to deliver. God chose Samson to deliver. Okay? Any questions? Any thoughts?
Yeah, and it's not really related to Samson, but you had my mind thinking about the barren women in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And all the ones that God provided to have a male child, all of them have done really extraordinary things. It's almost like God had them barren to begin with because he wanted them to have the firstborn, to have that. Do you think that...
Now that I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, of course, Sarah had Isaac, and...
that's true.
Hannah had Samuel.
Okay.
Manoah's wife had Samson. Who else? Elizabeth had John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Are there any other ones we know about that were... Well, Mary wasn't barren, though. You know what I'm saying. She did have... She did have an angelic visit. Yes, obviously. But
it's almost like if these women weren't barren, they would have already had children before this appointment.
Yeah,
I
understand what you're saying. Yep. So, and in chapter 14, we learn a little bit about him. Samson went down to Timnath and saw a woman of Timnath, the daughters of the Philistines. He came up and told his father and his mother and said, I have seen a woman in Timnath of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, therefore, get her for me to wife. Then his father and his mother said to him, is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all the people that thou goest to take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistine? And Samson said unto his father, get her for me, for she pleaseth me well. But his father and his mother knew not that it was of the Lord, and he sought an occasion against the Philistines for all the time that the Philistines has had dominion over him. So Samson seems like an interesting guy. At times he seems like a spoiled brat too, but you know, and why would you want a woman from the enemy? But God was going to use this, right? Against them. There's some things in the Bible sometimes that's hard to understand. And this is one of them, you know. Why would God not want... Why would God tell the nation of Israel not to marry, you know, the daughters of the land that I take you into, but it says here that this is of the Lord. You know, one of those things sometimes that makes you go, you know, and this is one of those things. So please don't ask me why, other than I will answer that. For at that, because this was of the Lord, okay? It was of the Lord, okay? And in spite of his sensuality, God used him for his glory, okay? He kills a lion. Judges 14, verse 12 to 14, he killed a lion. What is he not supposed to touch?
Dead body.
Anything dead, okay? Here he kills a lion. And then eventually he goes back, and what built the nest inside the dead carcass of the lion? Honeybees, right? And there's honey dripping, and he's eating the honey from the lion, right? And touching dead things, makes a riddle of it. Of course, you know, he's taken advantage of by the women. And you know, he's mocked, of course, and notice in verse 15 of chapter 14, it says, and it came to pass on the seventh day that they said unto Samson's wife, entice thy husband, that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn thee and thy father's house with fire. Have ye called us to take that we have? Is it not so? So nice people, huh? If you don't get him to tell us this riddle, we're going to burn you down and your father's house and everything. And Samson's wife wept before him and said, thou dost hate me and lovest me not. Thou hast put forth a riddle unto the children of my people and hast told it me and hast not told it me. And he said unto her, behold, I have not told it to my father or my mother. And shall I tell it to thee? And she wept before him the 7 days while their feast lasted. And it came to pass on the seventh day that he told her, because she lay sore upon him, she told the riddle unto the children of her people. And the men of the city on the seventh day, before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? And he said unto them, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. So, sorry, ladies, but you know, he got her back. But you know, 7 days she cried and cried and cried, and he finally said, and what does she do? She runs right out, tells them. You know, what is Samson learning about these people?
They're not trustworthy,
right? All right, and so he returns, and what does it say? After that, and the Spirit of the Lord, verse 19, came upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon and slew 30 men of them and took the spoil and gave change of the garments unto them which expounded the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. But Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend. Right? So Samson kills some Philistine, takes their clothes, gives it to the guys, and goes home. And while he's gone, somebody gave his wife to his friend. Right? So how do you think he feels?
Betrayed.
What is Samson? Yes, the Spirit of the Lord comes upon him, there's no doubt. But what is Samson driven by?
His emotions, right?
Okay. His emotions. His passion. His anger. Right? His, you know, fun time, riddles, let's have it. You know, he's driven by his emotions, which makes him pretty unstable, right? You ever see people driven by their emotions, right? If things are going good, they're good. If things are not going good, it's not good, right? They're happy, they're sad, they're angry, they're, you know, and you never know, right? You know, you never know. And this seems to be Samson, okay? And this is the guy that God uses. It's incredible. It's incredible. I just find it amazing. And this shows to me, though, that it's not us. It's God, right? It's not us. It's God. So because what kind of man is Samson without the Lord? Unstable, right? What does the proverb say? A man that's, what does it say? The man who is unstable in all his ways. Who is that man that's unstable in all his ways? I should know it. What? Barb's looking it up for us. So, but you know, so these he's unstable.
Double-minded.
Thank you. He's unstable in all his ways, right? So you know, double. He's happy. He's sad. He's this. You know, he's. Thanks, Nick. So, he returned again. He found out his father had given his bride to Samson's best man, and in an act of revenge, the Hebrew strong man set fire to the grain field, vineyards, and the olive groves. Chapter 15, verse 4 and 5. And Samson said concerning them, "Now shall I be more blameless than the Philistines, though I do them a displeasure?" And Samson went and caught 300 foxes, took firebrands, and tied and turned tail to tail, and put a firebrand in the midst between two tails. And when he had set the brands on fire, he let go into the standing corn of the Philistines and burnt up both the stalks and the standing corn and the vineyards. You ever see animals tied tail to tail?
No.
It's not a pretty sight, okay?
Well, it's quite a feat, isn't it?
It's quite a feat to do it, but, you know, they want to fight each other, right? And so now they've got this rope that's tied between them. They're fighting each other. They're running away from each other. And as they're doing this, the fire, they're on fire, and they're running through the corn, and they're setting everything on fire. Okay? And so it's quite a sight, obviously, you know. And so it says, verse 6, then the Philistines said, who's done this? And they answered, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken his wife and given her to his companion. And the Philistines came up, burnt her and her father with fire. Wow, that's what they said they were going to do, right? And Samson said unto them, though ye have done this, yet will I be avenged of you, and after that I will cease. And he smote them hip and thigh with a great slaughter, and he went down and dwelt in the rock top, in the top of the rock, Ethan. Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah, spread themselves in Leah. The men of Judah said, why are ye come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson are we come up to do to him as he has done to us. Then 300 men of Judah went to the top of the rock and said to Samson, knowest thou not the Philistines are rulers over us? What is this that thou hast done? And he said unto them, as they did unto me, so I have done unto them. And they said, we are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee to the hand of the Philistines. And Samson said unto them, swear unto me that you will not fall upon me yourself. And they spoke unto him, saying, no, but we will bind thee and bind thee fast and deliver thee into the hand, and surely we will not kill thee. And they bound him with two new cords, and he brought him up from the rock. So, of course, his own countrymen bind him, deliver him. They say, look, these people are ruling over us. What are you doing? Right? So, well, he's delivering them, okay? He's delivering them. And they bind him with new ropes, and he uses the jawbone of the donkey, and he will break those ropes, and he slays 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. What's in his hand?
Another corpse.
Another dead thing. Another broken Nazarite vow, right?
Yeah.
And God is using him, okay? And, so he does this, and he delivers himself, and he prayed only one of his two recorded prayers. And 15:18 says, and he was sore athirst and called on the Lord and said, thou hast given this great victory into the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised? So this is kind of a selfish prayer, right? You've given me, Lord, this great victory, and now I'm going to die of thirst. And the other prayer we'll look at in a little while. But So now he goes to Gaza. See Gaza there on the map? It's down on the coast. Gaza is one of the capital city of the Philistines. Remember that, okay? It's one of the capital cities of there. And it says, then went Samson to Gaza and saw there a harlot and went unto her. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson has come hither. And they compassed him in and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city and were quiet all that night, saying, in the morning, when it is day, we shall kill him. And Samson lay till midnight and arose at midnight, took the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders and carried them up to the top of the hill that is before Hebron. Okay? Now, I don't know if any of you have any study Bibles, but see where it says Gaza? Okay. Now, go east. See where it says Hebron, heading toward the Dead Sea? Okay. That is approximately 35 miles. Okay. And that is approximately a 3,000-foot elevation change. So not only did he go 35 miles, but he went 35 miles uphill with the gates of the city on his shoulders, posts, bars, and all. Okay? So, I said, let me do some research. How much do gates weigh? Old city gates. Now, you have to remember, what were the gates of the city for? Okay, keep out, so protection, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have little plywood gates, okay? You know, we have gates, this capital city. Now, no one knows for sure, but some city gates were as high as 100 feet tall. We don't know. But the rough average estimate that I got, it's pretty big estimate, but either way, they say these gates could have weighed between 5 and 10 tons. Okay? You know, huge gates. Now, when we were in Jerusalem, the eastern gate is cemented closed, but you could see the outline of the eastern gate. It's huge, okay? And it's thick. And if you took the posts, the hinges, the bars and all, and you carry, you're talking a massive amount of weight, okay? So let me say a couple of things here. How do we know that the Spirit of God had to move upon him to do this? Because 5 tons on the back of a man, let's take even the smallest amount of weight, right? 5 tons, 10,000 pounds, would crush and kill him. There's no way any human being could lift up 5 tons of gates, carry it 35 miles up a 3,000 foot incline. There's no humanly possible way, even if you are built like Andre the Giant, right? There's no way that can happen. But does the Bible record lies? Well, sometimes it records lies that other people say, but you know, no. So this had to be God, right? And let's even assume he's a big guy. This is a major, major miracle here, okay? A major miracle. And Gaza is 100 feet above sea level, and Hebron is 3,300 feet above sea level. And it, they say it's a constant uphill. So, but what did he do by taking their gates away? He took their defense away also, you know. So, I mean, how did they explain that? How, you know, I don't know. But I just find that interesting. What do you think? I mean, obviously, when the Spirit of God is upon Samson, he does extraordinary things. But when the spirit is gone from him and he's just a normal man, he's obviously moved by his passion because he spends the night with a harlot, right? So he's a man with a sexual appetite, right? But isn't that amazing? I mean, did you ever hear any messages about how big these gates or bars might have been?
Aren't there insects that can carry many, many times their weight?
What's that?
Aren't there insects?
Sure, I think like the ant is like when you think of an ant weighs like we can't even weigh it, right? But yet it could that's only a half a pound. Well, yeah, that's a half a pound, but it's you know, but yeah,
the weight of the ant. So So I mean, if God can do that.
Well, right. I mean, obviously this is a miracle, you know. And was God doing this? You know, I don't know how he did it, whether he and Howard, whatever, doesn't matter. But it was done, and no one else ever did it or could do it. Okay? Good? Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I wonder if they took a bunch of Philistines and went to bring him back. Rollers and...
Well, it's interesting now, though. It's interesting when they when we see him with Delilah. You know, what are they asking? What's the secret of his strength? Because they're learning that this guy, you know, he just killed 1,000 of us with a jawbone. You know, he carried our gates away. He, you know, he's just destroying us. You know, he's wiping our crops out all by himself. He's destroying us. So.
They should have known that it was God. I mean, they've been seeing, they had heard about miracles in the past, and.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, why did the religious leaders crucify Jesus? You know what I'm saying? They saw all those things too. It just shows man's, you know, inability to believe God.
But I don't get why they didn't just stick him with some arrows or spears or something. He wasn't like impervious to being stuck.
Yeah. Well.
Guys with a spear. I mean.
Well, God.
Like that.
Yeah, God's with him too, though. I mean, that's the whole thing. God's with him. You know what I'm saying? But he's as it says there on the bottom of page 73 in the left column, he's broken all of his vows. He's touched dead animals. He's been drunk with wine. And we're going to see in a minute he allows somebody to cut his hair. So chapter 16, verse 21, the Philistines took him, put out his eyes, right? And he says here that at this point, Samson learned the high cost of low living. And how did they put out his eyes? Why did they put out his eyes? Because, what did he do? He told Delilah. Was his secret in his hair, though? Was his secret his long hair? So what is he bragging on? Himself, right? You know, and of course, oh, if you tie me with this, and blah, 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 you know, and if you do this, and if you do this. And finally he said, if you cut my hair, I'll be weak. So he got up, and what does it say? He didn't know the Lord had left him. Right? So they put out his eyes, and now they make sport of him. And they make him grind, you know, before, you know, like an animal. What pushed the mill around? You know, or pull the mill around. You know, an animal usually did that, an ox or a donkey. And so here he's doing it, and they're making fun of him. And in prison, though, he is gaining some of his strength back. But look at verse 22. Howbeit the hair of his head began to grow out again after he was shaven. Then the Lord of the Philistines gathered them together for to offer a great sacrifice. So he's got to be in captivity for a while. Or he's like Nick and his hair grows very quickly, right? And when the people saw him, they praised their God. For they said, our God hath delivered into the hands of our enemy and the destroyer of our country, who slew many of us. It came to pass when their hearts were merry that they said, call for Samson that we make a sport. And they called for Samson out of the prison house, and he made them sport. And they set him between the pillars. And Samson said unto the lad that held him by the hand, suffer me that I may feel the pillars whereof the house standeth, that I may lean upon them. So what is he saying? Take me to the main supports of the place. And the house was full of men and women, and the lords of the Philistines was there. And there were upon the roof about 3,000 men and women. And beheld while Samson made sport. And Samson called upon the Lord. Now that's interesting, right? What is Samson doing? He's calling upon the Lord. Maybe this is why he's in chapter 11, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, O Lord, what's the next two words?
Remember me.
Hmm. Now, you think that's, Lord, do you remember me? Or, Lord, remember me, I pray thee, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines from my two eyes. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars, which were where the house stood, on them, which was borne up, the one with his right hand and the one with his left. And Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. And he bowed himself with all his might, and the house fell upon the lords and upon all the people that were there. So what kind of people are there? The leaders, right? So the dead which he slew at his death were more than they which he slew in life. How many did he slay in his lifetime? We know over 1,000, right? His brethren and all the house of his father came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the burying place of Manoah, his father. He judged Israel 20 years. Interesting man. Very interesting man. And it's interesting that some of the people that God tells us about that he used were so imperfect.
Yeah.
Yes, Gideon, humble, small, but at the end of his life, got lifted up with pride, right? And Jephthah, you know, was his vow foolish or not? You know, Samson, you know, strong man, but a man of faith. So what do you think? I mean, what do you think of Samson? You think it's the end of his life? Remember, God is concerned about how we start, how we run, and how we finish. But what is it really about? It's how we finish, you know?
I definitely am encouraged by these stories because, you know, a lot of us don't live perfectly from start to finish.
Not a lot of us, all of us. you know.
And, I want, it doesn't matter, you know, maybe bits and pieces here, I've actually earned a crown to throw at Jesus' feet, but I still have breath, I still have life,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
Am I going to do right?
My imperfections, I bemoan them. Mm. But I have found that some of the things that I was so imperfect about,
right.
The Lord has been able to use them.
Right.
As I talk to discouraged younger Christians.
Yes. Yeah. Now here's another thing we can learn from Samson. You reap what you sow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what did he reap? He reaped the life of the flesh. And what did it cost him? His eyes, his freedom, right? He was a slave. And for a while, people made sport of him, you know? They mocked him, you know? And they probably said things like, oh, is this the best Jehovah has? You know what I'm saying? They praise their gods, right? You know, and
it's a story for all ages, at all
yeah.
walks of life.
Yeah.
You know, the young, the old, the one that's, you know, been saved since they were six, or the one that's lived
yeah.
a sinful life.
Yeah. Did he grow up in a spiritual home, a godly home? Yes, he did. You know, and. You know, his parents knew that God had their hands on him from the start. And, you know, so you know, but it's very, very interesting. Now, another thing, you know, for the guys in the room here, girls, you can, you know, ladies, you can, but, you know, don't think that we can't fall, you know, for the enticement of the flesh and a woman, because you think of the strongest man in the world, Samson, right? He gave in to the flesh. So strength has nothing to do with overcoming that, right? The wisest man in the world, Solomon, what did all his wives do to him? Turned his heart away from God, right? The most spiritual man in the world, David, a man after God's own heart. What happened to him? You know, He fell also. So we need to be careful. If it could happen to David, if it could happen to Solomon, if it can happen to Samson, it can happen to Dan. You know, so Dan has to be careful. Okay? And All right. Any other questions on Samson? Thoughts? Ideas? Interesting character. You know, probably if I were writing the Bible, I didn't write the Bible, but if Dan Boyce were writing the Bible, I don't know if I would have included Samson in Hebrews 11. But, you know, it does definitely show the very humanness. You know, like some people, even though they stumble in, oh, Abraham, yeah, no doubt. Abraham belongs there. You know, oh, Moses, no doubt. You know, he belongs there. But Samson? You know, but he's there. Okay. Abimelech, Judges 9. This is a sad story. Abimelech was one of the sons of Gideon, and one by a concubine. We talked about Gideon, right? And how many children did he Gideon have? It said that he had 70 sons, and he killed 69 of his half-brothers and was crowned king. But one of his half-brothers escaped, right? So why do you think he killed off his brothers?
No
what?
Competition.
No competition for the crown, right? Remember, what did Gideon say? What did the people want to do with Gideon? Make him their king, but they said, Gideon said, no, I don't want to be the king. But obviously, you know, obviously Abimelech had some kingly ambitions. So he kills his family. Okay? And his brother, half-brother, escaped. And 3 years later, God stirred up trouble between Abimelech and the citizens of Shechem. And Abimelech was killed. And some Christians have been bothered concerning the statement recorded in Judges 9:23, which says, then God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. So, you know, why is that? That really shouldn't be something, because don't we see in the book of Revelation often God using angels to bring judgment and to do things? I don't agree with the second statement that these were demonic fallen angels that he was using. I believe that they were angelic messengers sent from God to do the work of judgment. Just like one day God will use many in the book of Revelation. Okay?
I didn't take it as that at all. I was reading it as he gave the men of Shechem, like, evilness. Like,
yeah, yeah, I mean, it could be that. Yeah, yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Good point. Real good point.
Kind of like Pharaoh's heart being hardened, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But it obviously could be those other two.
Yep.
I didn't think about that.
Micah in chapter 17 and 18. Micah is a thief and an idol worshiper. He was encouraged by his indulgent mother to start his own religion. And this he did. Among other things, he hired his own personal priest, a money-grubbing Levite from Bethlehem. And this perverted private pastor was later enticed by the tribe of the Danites to become their official priest. So this guy, what did he do? He followed the money, right? Now, there is a message on Sermon Audio called 10 Shekels and a Shirt. And this preacher's name, it's an old message. His name is Paris, like the city of Paris, Paris Reedhead. And the message is called 10 Shekels and a Shirt. You gotta listen to that message. He kind of uses this as a text, and he uses this Levite who sold his soul for, you know, a change of garments and 10 shekels, you know. And it's really, really a good message. Let me tell you one thing. It starts out a little slow, so don't get, oh, Pastor, this is, it gets cooking. Okay, it really does. It's Harris, a good method. Harris Reedhead. Harris Reedhead. 10 shekels and a shirt. It's one of the most listened to messages on Sermon Audio.
Wow.
It's great. And then we'll end with 19 through 21. A terrible, terrible, terrible story. But there's these, and I agree with him, these are some of the most depressing chapters in the Bible. The story of a Levite and his unfaithful concubine wife. They stopped overnight in Gibeah, and this was tribal territory of Benjamin. And the couple stayed with an old man, and at night the group wanted, they surrounded the house and demanded the Levite come out and participate in their sin of homosexuality. But what does the Levite do to save himself? He throws his wife out to them. Right? Nice guy. What did Lot say? Lot said, take my daughters. The angel saved him from doing that, but this guy's trying to save his own skin. And of course, they abused her so much that she died, right? So he cuts her dead body into 12 pieces and mails a piece to each of the tribes, the heads of the tribes. And Israel was enraged at the crime, and they gathered people together, 400,000 troops, and they attacked Benjamin, and they refused to surrender. Civil war broke out, and a three-day battle, and Benjamin lost 40,000 men, and 600 of the 26,000 soldiers of Benjamin were left alive. A sober and saddened Israel then provided wives for these 600 men, lest the name of Benjamin would disappear from the face of the earth. So, again, what do we see in this tragic, tragic, tragic book? We see every man doing that which was right in his own eyes. Even Samson, right? But these people are doing that which is right in their own eyes because there was no king. And God was about to move, and God was about to do something. And we'll learn next week about a little girl, Moabite girl named Ruth. We'll learn about her. So we're going to pick up for our last one, Roman numeral 5. And then we'll learn about we'll learn about Samuel.
Have you seen the movie Ruth?
Hmm?
There's a movie made about the book of Ruth.
Is there?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Okay, I have not seen it. I think I saw Ruth, though, at... Was that Esther that we saw the movie here?
Esther's
or was that...
Too.
So, yeah, so...
So but, it's not Netflix, PureFlix.
Okay.
PureFlix, I believe, has both of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So what do we learn from Judges? Israel, after Joshua died, Israel had no leadership. And what's the last sentence, the last verse 25 of chapter 21? In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes.
Well, you know, they didn't really follow God.
No, they weren't following God.
Not at all.
No. They weren't following God.
And yet, what did God do? He sent several judges to pull them out of all their crap many times.
Right, and God was gracious to them
and
merciful to them when they did call out upon him, but they kept falling into sin, you know? Can man govern himself?
No. We weren't built or made to do such a thing.
What was that?
Not apart from God.
Not apart from God, obviously, but you know, why do we have, please, I'm qualifying what I'm saying. Government is out of control, and there's much government overreach. But what are laws created for?
To protect the pilgrim.
Protection, right? You know, to point out what's wrong, right? If you have a law, and you know, you then it points out the law breaker, right? Government is supposed to protect us, right? And
without laws, you would have chaos.
What was that?
Without laws, you would have chaos.
Without law, you would have chaos. Okay.
Which is exactly what we saw in Judges.
In Judges, right? You know, when Moses was leading them, and they were following God. When Joshua was leading them, they were following God. You know, we're going to see when Samuel comes on the scene. You know, Eli is no example. His son is no example. And, you know, are there godly people alive during these times? Of course. Manoah, his wife, you know, Gideon and Hannah and Hannah's husband.
Elkanah.
What's his name?
Elkanah.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, and Samuel. So, you know, God has his people. Just like today, if the government, you know, should suddenly blow up, you know, God would still have his people. But as a whole, and God ordained government. Romans 13, you know.
Well, we still can't exist with just government. I mean,
exactly.
See it in our own country.
Right.
We have laws, we have government.
Yeah.
Because government is made up of man.
So right.
Man is not...
Yeah. Right.
And of course, in early America, they were looking to God for leadership, and now it's they're looking to.
And many of our founding fathers said that, you know, you can't rightly govern without God and His Word. You know, so interesting.
Yeah.
So, but every man can't do that which is right in his own eyes, because you may throw your concubine out to save your own skin. And then get mad at the people that you threw out and hack up your wife and then all those people kill them, you know. So you see how crazy it is? And it ends on a pretty sour note, you know. And this is what's going on in the land of Israel.
And I see parallels between what we read in Judges and in our culture today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
People, home invasions, and
squatters.
Houses.
Yeah, right. And you know, a house is vacant, and people move in there, and you can't get them out of your own house.
They have more rights than the homeowner.
Yeah.
Crazy. I had a tenant in my apartment house in Manchester, and he had gotten out of prison, so. My husband gave him a job at the gas station, and we rented him an apartment in our house. Later on, after he moved out, he burned down his girlfriend's house and killed her two children in it.
Yeah.
Went back to prison.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah. You've got, I mean, I don't even need to mention the immorality, but then Micah, we've got, I mean, that's the first cult preaching, money-hungry preacher we see.
Yeah.
What do we have now?
Yep.
Cults and
money-hungry.
Super churches.
Yep, good point.
Churches.
Good point.
Yeah, you too.
All right, folks, thanks.